Hey everyone, and welcome back to Sales Burrito. If you're an SE and you're working with your account executive, getting your new quota this time of year, doing key account planning is absolutely required. And for many SEs, they always wonder, should they be involved in the process? I'm going to say yes, you should be. We're going to tell you why here on today's episode of Sales Burrito.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! The premier podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs, with your hosts, Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Good day, everyone. This is, I forgot how many episodes we've done now of Sales Burrito, but it's a lot so far. So this is episode, we're in season two, episode 10, I believe. Yes, the doozer. We're in the doozer.
That's right.
Bringing you quality commentary created by SEs
for SEs.
How are you doing, Mr. David Siles?
I'm doing well, my friend. You know, a little, getting back from being a little under the weather, so... For those of you catching the extra Barry White in the tone here, it was not my DJ's audio processing. It was actually...
I'm never going to leave you alone. Blah, 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 blah.
It was human-generated content there today. So, but yeah, doing well, you know, and today's topic is pretty timely because I've spent the last couple weeks in QBRs with our global account teams. And, you know, even though I don't own accounts directly, I'm an overlay to our sales organization. And as part of that, you know, we go through every time of the year, we reset, you know, what the core accounts are that we're going to give out to the account teams. They get their quota that goes along with that. And as part of that, you know, they have to come up with their attack plan. And in our company, we give everybody really, you know, a lot of latitude in terms of how they want to attack the account. We obviously have things that we inspect and expect from them as part of their sales motion. But how they attack the accounts is really kind of up to the account team. And you know, one of the things that I've seen through this process is some of the AEs and SEs take it as a team mentality and go right at it, where there are other times, you know, the account executive is kind of just assumed to own that process of what's the attack plan, what's the account, how are we going to penetrate it, how are we going to generate more revenue out of it, whether it's an existing customer, net new customer, land and expand customer. And so, you know, I want to challenge our audience that's the sales engineer that's listening to really think about why you should be involving yourself in the key account planning phase, because it's absolutely critical, not only to your success, but to, you know, your team's success. And I know you think around the same way, Enrique. We've had this conversation in the past, and I think it's something, you know, we've both had to do in our careers, and being able to share some of this knowledge back, I think it's pretty timely.
Well, it's kind of like losing weight. I hate to use the analogy, but if you're not weighing yourself at the time to figure out what you weight, right? And you just think you weight something, but you don't, you forget it, right? If you don't have that muscle memory to see it, to do it, right? To see where you're at, you're never going to be successful. So case in point, right? To what you said, key account planning is very big, particularly when you have a new territory or an existing territory, to be able to figure out how are you going to meet your goals. And it off, you know, maybe it is because sometimes we forget that sales engineers are part of sales, right? You know, they're, you know, I know that you and I have talked a lot about how sales engineers, you know, are as important, if not a little bit, you know, to me, more important than the sales reps, right? But maybe that's what it is, where, you know, like, for example, if I have a patch like New York City and I'm working the financial district, right? And I know that I'm going to have some of these large accounts that are in Manhattan. I need to make sure that I make an analysis collectively with my SE on what will be maybe the low-hanging fruit on the accounts to account, or if it's the big whale, the big account, what is the detailed planning to make sure that we, you know, that we have all hands on deck to get and penetrate that account.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the thing is, you really have to understand your accounts, right? I mean, you know, if it's an existing account that may have made a massive purchase last quarter or last year, you know, they may be set for a while. So, you know, you can't always expect that, you know, that $600,000 customer, you know, last year is going to be $600,000 again this year. So really having an understanding and working hand in hand with your customer to understand, you know, their goals, their requirements, you know, kind of their long-term plan is key when you're backing into your quota as a sales team to really understand what it's going to take to achieve it. And, you know, the number that goes into that is got to be broken out across, you know, what you can sell, what you can cross sell, what you can upsell. And, you know, from the time that you put that together, you have to break that down into your kind of your yearly plan. And most of us are quarterly driven. You know, I like to say quarteritis. It's not not the fact that we don't work on a yearly number, but, you know, it typically is that quarter frequency. And, you know, so having those quarterly business reviews to really understand that strategy better is, you know, really, really key. And to that extent, you know, the SE really should be part of that account planning. And I think one of the things that you and I were talking about before we jumped on for recording is that unfortunately in today's world, you know, and a lot of people are in their new year, you know, salespeople don't always stay, right? There's turnover with sales, and that happens on both sides of the table, the SE and the AE. But for some reason, historically, SEs are more constant, right? So, you know, with the turnover and the salespeople, you quickly could be the account team.
No, absolutely right. I mean, I've been in a lot of situations where you know, maybe the sales rep did not make their quota and they make a decision of moving on. Sometimes those decisions can have other ramifications. For example, like I've seen ramifications of, you know, think about it from this perspective. If you have a sales team, an AE and an SE, and they have a already preset quota and a new AE comes in, well, what happens with the existing quota? Do you reset the quota for the net person, or do you keep the same quota, right? So there's some mathematics that happen in the background that can affect the pocket of an SE depending on that decision alone of the AE leaving, right? But to your point, right, if the AE has ball control or understanding of what's happening in the sales process, he can take the role temporarily of being an AE by understanding the account, understanding the metrics that are needed to find out if you have truly a deal or not. And then where that shines a lot is in two places, in a quarterly business review or a QBR, or as well as in key account mapping, which is, you know, your patch, your understanding, how do you penetrate the account. And account mapping can also be based on existing customers. Of course. Maybe you did a land and expand to get you into the door. What is the key mapping to make sure that you're bringing revenue from an existing install base into your patch? But it's all about, obviously, to me, it's about the diversification of the portfolio. If you're too much on bringing a lot of revenue from existing accounts, that's not exciting to me. To me, it's the net new logos, new business.
Yeah. I mean, some people are in the renewal business. Some people are in the hunting business. Some people are in a blended perspective. It depends on your organization. But, you know, I think another key reason why the SE should always be involved too is, you know, as an SE, we often sometimes have a different view into the organization than our account executive does or account manager does, right? So, you know, that additional insight, you know, I've been in deal reviews where the SE knows for a fact it's not an actual opportunity. And the account executive, you know, is hearing happy ears, thinks it's all hunky-dory. And, you know, the SE is their ground truth radar and absolutely understands that, you know, any cycles they're going to spend on that account are going to be wasted cycles. I'm not saying that they're always right, but you have to take that additional input and that value. And as SEs, you know, you have a technical viewpoint, you have an account viewpoint, and, you know, it's just as valid. So that insight, I think, is something that, you know, good account teams will take in combination. You know, you may not always understand, you know, some of the business transactional sides that's happening with the accounting manager having conversations that you weren't part of. But, you know, when you're in the trenches, oftentimes the guys who live in the basement, you know what's really is happening, right? I mean, there are some strategic stuff that just happens above their level, but, you know, if you're not going to win them over, or, you know, they're completely happy and, you know, going to hug their traditional solution, and just, you know, you can't find the pain that they're going to solve with your solution, you know, that's the information that you got to know and kind of going into that process. And
such a well thing that you just said, right? Because you're right. If you, as a sales engineer that is listening to this show, don't have the relationship with your sales rep to call BS on a deal, and that sales rep continues to move that deal forward, you know what? Take talk to your manager, talk to your director, talk to someone. Make sure, because I get it, right? You don't want, you know, there's the emotional intelligence or the emotional IQ of things, right? Where the sales rep maybe is, you know, saying that there's a deal to kind of show that he's adding value to his peers and his boss, right? But if you know that there's not a deal there, and the sales rep is trying to kind of, you know, keep you quiet, so not say anything, that is a toxic relationship there. That's something that you have to literally handle straight on. Now, when you're doing key account mappings, right, as you're trying to penetrate an account from a sales engineer perspective, you know, one thing that that resonated a lot, let's say, for example, in the same scenario or the same vein of, you know, that there's not a deal there. Good sales engineers know that if they have, let's say when I used to go to offices of customers, right? Because now it's a lot of it we do is virtual. I would ask for, hey, give me a walk of your data center. We'd love to see your data center, right? If you see that the data center is in a closet and that's their main data center and has a, you know, a mop and a bucket in the same closet, forget it. The chances that they're going to buy your product, knowing that your product probably costs as much as that entire rack in that closet, it's not a deal, right? So that's why sales engineers, if the world didn't need it, sales engineers, we would not be doing this. Sales engineers are needed on any complex sale, and it's part of the visuals of doing that.
It absolutely is. It's a great nugget, too. When you're walking the floor, you also see what competition gear may be sitting there doing a POC beside you. And
absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of ground truth radar intelligence. And again, that's another reason why the SE's got to be involved in the conversation. I mean, also, at the end of the day, I mean, if you're going to win a deal after you've mapped it out, you know, you're going to have to get a technical win. And as SE's, we own the technical win. So, you know, the SEs are going to affect the opportunity and the build of materials and the growth in that account that happened just as much as the account executive. So being upfront on your plan of attack, knowing what you're going to go in at, and, you know, having that guidance up front is absolutely key. But, you know, I think one of the things that does muddy this a little bit, and, you know, it's something not every organization has to deal with, but some do, right? You know, not everybody is a one-for-one relationship. You know, there are SEs that are in a pooled relationship. And so, you know, I think it changes the dynamic a little bit, because if you're in that pooled relationship, you may not always be engaged with the same, you know, team. But you want to make sure so you're still getting yourself injected somehow. Because if you're making your number tied to, you know, a resource, or you're a fractional resource for it, you know, you may actually have to do this on a 3X or 4X workload, because you have to still get that input and insight to all the deals that you may touch. And, you know, being a shared resource, it just puts more onus on the SE. But I wouldn't shy away from it. You know, if you're in that situation where you're, you know, you're a split fractional opportunity, make sure you're having the same conversation with every AE, you know, account manager that you're mapped to.
Well, I don't care if you're in a 1-to-1, 2-to-1, 3-to-1, right, mapping, you know, meaning 3 sales reps to 1 sales engineer. You owe it to yourself to teach others and to be able to actually speak with confidence and have the leadership that you have to be able to be a devil's advocate. I mean, I wouldn't want to work with any sales rep that doesn't want me to be a devil's advocate. And the way that I get to that point, the way that I create that relationship, that trust with a sales rep, is by on day one setting exactly what I'm here.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, often sales reps think that sales engineers can derail deals because they are trying to be either too honest or too frank, whatnot. That's not the case. Sales engineers are there to basically remove all the risk on a deal, you know. And the risk can be many risks, right? There's business risk, there's the money risk, and then there's a technical risk. But after that technical win or that technical closure, the SE is even far more important to ensure that that deal moves all the way to close because of the litmus test of checking things.
Of course. And really, the goal at the end of the day is we want to ensure, you know, you're on the same page as your account manager, right? You guys are a team working on the same common goal. Everybody in the company should work on the same common goal. I mean, you know, the number is the number, and being able to do that is going to be critical to your success. And, you know, I know some SEs who are listening to this and SEs throughout their career, they don't always stay on the sales engineering side of it. Sometimes they say, hey, look, you know, I want to make the step up. I want to become an accounting manager. And I think it's a great way to get the entree into it too, right? You can still own the technical piece of the equation here, but you know, being part of the account planning process up front and having part of the TAC plan, gives you a bit more insight into what salespeople are owning and responsible for. So if you ever want to make that transition into a dedicated salesperson, you have that exposure, right? It's kind of a way to get that good on-the-job experience while you're still getting to do the best of both worlds. So it's just another way to think about it, and another reason why you should always be plugged in. Obviously, again, if your AE leaves and the company says, hey, look, until we hire somebody, you got to carry the water, you're going to carry both bags anyways.
You know, one of the things that I'll share with the audience, and this is a good exercise for anybody that is listening to the show that they can use, try to play the yes, no game. The yes, no game is a game that I was taught, when I was back in my Dell EMC days, right? So we're talking probably about a decade ago. And the yes and no game is me as a sales engineer leader, right? It could be yourself, right? It could be your team, whoever. Go through your deals for the quarter or next quarter and say yes or no. Is it coming or not? And you will be surprised the times that I play the yes and no game, how maybe new sales engineers that are making the transition, or even experienced sales engineers, struggle with saying yes or no. And what I'm looking on that is, twitch. I'm looking that flinch. Do you have command of your business or not? Do you know what you're doing or not? If your sales rep is gone tomorrow, is this still a yes? And that's it's very powerful.
It is. And sometimes you watch the color of people's faces. It's like, it's also a good ground truth radar, whether or not your forecast is real.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, from Dave, obviously you've sat down through a lot of QBRs and as well, right? What are some one or two things that you know out of the top of your head that great sales teams do, particularly focus on SEs on QBRs? Like for example, the stuff that I always see all the time is you'll have the sales rep walking in front of the room. He stands in the front of the room to actually talk about the QBR, and I expect the SE to do the same. Like sometimes that there's something broken when the SC is sitting in the back still watching it. And folks, we're thinking as if we were in a conference room kind of talking this, right? But what are some of the things that you know?
Well, I mean, for one, again, I always view it as an account team. So yeah, absolutely correct. One person shouldn't be up there just kind of reporting the news. And one of my pet peeves about QBRs is the fact that we spend so much of the time talking about what's already happened, right? I can read the newspaper, I can read history. And, in our QBRs, I always look for, all right, report what happened, identify where you were short, or what went right, what went wrong. And then, take those learnings, but apply it. What's your plan of attack going forward? And so that plan of attack forward, again, it's owned by two different people, right? The AE's got their component of it. The SE's got their component of it. So being able to kind of deliver your attack plan and, not necessarily be death by PowerPoint. I think everybody in today's world is to the point where they're Zoom fatigued and over fatigued. So, some of the best QBRs in the world are done from one sheet of paper, right? If you can't fit it on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper and deliver your plan for the next quarter, it's not going to be actionable. You can only do so many things, right? 3 to 5 things you can accomplish in a quarter. And you have to take those 3 to 5 things and say, this is how I'm going to move the needle, right? Over what I just typically do as a transactional business. And so I think when you could look at it from that perspective, you put that lens on it, that's one way that you can attack your customer base as an AESE relationship and a QBR and really have myopic focus on what you need to focus on and let the rest of the stuff kind of fall by the wayside. And I think, the vision needs to be there too, right? I mean, there's obviously you're going to go after these opportunities. You're going to have the same vision as your account team. And so you should be reinforcing that to the QBR, right? You're each going to have your own responsibilities to perform. And, obviously the data's got to be there to back it up. Again, we were just talking about, can you say yes or no to those opportunities? Does the, does the Salesforce data back that up? Are you real or over stuffing, right? I mean, but yeah, that kind of stuff just comes with the business. And I think well-seasoned, well-trained people, that have good discipline, are doing that already. So, I typically don't have to dwell on that too much anymore in QBRs. I think maybe that's just because you're really good at training people and our sales methodology, and they know what to expect, what we expect.
And to your point, you just basically made the best point out of this episode. If everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing, they know their position, they know how to forecast accurately, how to bring the deal in, that how to have the sales force hygiene to fill the blanks and understand your business, QBR should be not a big deal. Not a big deal, right? I think that we're, to your point, when you do a QBR, I often see sales teams that have that not fail, but miss the mark on spending too much time on what already close. What close? It close. It's done. Gone.
Everybody likes to talk about the big home run they hit or, you know, and why they didn't get the big deal. But it's like, it's over, right? You can't rewind time. It's history. I mean, if you spend a lot of time talking about history, you know, you might as well quit your job and become a historian because that's what you are.
Right set. Such a very, very powerful right set. And I mean, I will say the other thing that I see is, you know, some sales teams will actually, I mean, I don't see this a lot on sales engineers because our mentality is very technical. And when, you know, yes, we don't think in binary or series in one, we think in gray areas and the opportunity, how to make things. But when it comes to something like presenting empirical data, sales engineers are like, legit. Like they want to make sure that the QBR is good, right? But what I've seen teams fail is where, you know, they'll put in the deals that they're thinking that they're bringing for the quarter and the opportunities and whatnot. And you start looking at these deals and they're push deals or it's something that is, you're doing it because it's just showed up in the quarter, but you didn't even clean what deals you pushed from the last quarter to this quarter to show that these are real deals. And again, a lot of people think that management doesn't know how to call your BS when you're doing that. And no, we read it. We know. Because at one point, we were there. Like, I was a sales engineer that was there and saw it. So I can read it.
And it rolls uphill. You know, people may think it rolls downhill, but that's one thing it rolls uphill. Because your number, we have to take and forecast that number forward. At the end of the day, that number is landing on the CEO. And so when that number is missed, it's that same domino that comes back down. So, you know, there's that whole overlay that's going to happen and that perspective is always going to be there. And in today's world, you know, there are so many new technologies, things like Clary and other forecasting tools that, you know, that you even take that manual introspection out of the equation. I mean, it shows up on our dashboard, big red blasted flashing lights saying, hey, look, this is suspected, this is bad, or this is not matriculating right. So you can do all the fancy things in the world, push the dates, you know, and do all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the process is going to bear it out now. And, you know, be true to yourself and be honest with it. You know, the same thing goes for, you know, your QBRs that are externally facing. I mean, you know, most companies today expect the quarterly business review to not only be internal, but also to your individual customer base. And so you have to use that same kind of hygiene discipline and go at your customer, but you're also, you know, getting them to buy in because, again, part of the account planning you want is that you guys are on the same page, right? And if you're doing the quarterly business review and you come in expecting, you know, you're going to get X amount of business for them, or you think this is their goals for the year and you have that review and it's not the case, you know, you may have to reset expectations. And so if you're not doing that, you know, you don't want to wait until, you know, you're finding out the deal's falling apart when you should be building that relationship, whether you're in an active opportunity or not, continuously throughout the year, especially with your key accounts.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Clary. One of the things that I liked about, you know, Clary and other sales tools to actually help with forecast accuracy is how, if you think about it, right, you know, and I'm not saying that sales engineer organizations do this, but if you think about it, right, you're going to have the sales rep, you're going to have that sales manager, you're going to have a regional VP of sales, you're going to have maybe the East or the West VP of sales, you're going to have the global. All that chain of command and some of these new forecasting tools out there, they have to check a deal to see that they believe that the deal is going to come. So imagine if there's a disconnect between the sales manager and the VP of sales and those in the middle, right? So again, the reason why I'm stressing on this is, you know, you can't BS things around. You have to make sure that if you don't have enough deals, you know, you have to state it. If you have pipeline, but the pipeline has not converted quick enough into an opportunity, you gotta own it, right? And as a sales engineer, that can be stressful. Why? Because you're tied to the same quota. And obviously, if you want to make all the world of riches that we have been promoting on this show for the longest time, it takes two to tango. So that's why you have to call BS or be that devil's advocate on that sales rep, because you have to let him know, I need to make money just like you need to make money.
Great way to wrap it up, my friend. I love the episode. I think this is very timely. Again, you just, you know, I think we always pick up topics sometimes that just happen in our daily life, but I'm sure our audience is going through it as well. So hopefully you found some insight into it, and we're appreciative of everybody who is tuning in. A couple things for you. Again, while we always drop these podcasts on Wednesday on your favorite podcasting platforms, it's also available on YouTube. Please click like and subscribe on our YouTube channel. We're trying to grow the video content just as much. We also have a new show called Tech and Tacos, and Tech and Tacos is a timely weekly news summary, kind of bringing to you with a little bit of humor and a little bit of knowledge chips on the side. And we have different guest hosts that come in and join us on that episode. Tech and Tacos is hosted through salesburrito.com and also available on Twitter at Tech.
I want to add something real quick, because sure. A lot of from day one, you, the audience, have told us that you like the format of you like the chemistry between Dave and I. You like the format of how we're laughing, whatnot. If you think that you like this format, go check out Tech and Tacos, because that right there is just like another level up. Yeah, so
it's at 11. It's picante.
It's literally picante. Literally.
All right, my friend. Well, until next time, folks, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing, and we'll catch you next week on Sales Burrito.
Have a great day, everyone.
We hope you've enjoyed the Sales Burrito Show. To subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.